time to welcome our science commentator today. It's Alan Blackmore. Alan Blackman, I beg your pardon. Professor of Chemistry, School of Science, Auckland University of Technology. Tēnā koe and welcome.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Now, I'm very curious. This is extraordinary, some of the medical research that's happening around paralysis and assisting people in various ways. This one's to do with harnessing brain waves, this story, Alan.
Yeah, this is quite amazing. It really sort of shows science at its best, I guess, in the fact that science is not just one sort of experiment carried out in isolation, but it's a culmination of years and years and years of work. So what these workers at the University of California in San Francisco have done is that they have taken a severely paralyzed man and they have enabled him to communicate in sentences by translating signals from his brain to his vocal tract directly into words on a screen. And that's literally mind-blowing when you think about it. So literally what they're doing is they're decoding brain signals and converting those signals into words which then appear on the screen. And as I say, this is a culmination of at least sort of 10 years of work by a guy by the name of Dr. Edward Chang. And he, along with many other co-workers, he's the lead author on this paper. He's been studying epileptic patients for a long time. And these epileptic patients, what was happening with them, they were trying to pin down the source of their seizures in their brain. And so these epileptic patients had electrode arrays implanted in their brains to look at their epilepsy. And on top of that, they then volunteered to have their brain activity measured or analysed in terms of speech-related activity. In other words, what signals in their brain were heading towards the vocal tract in order to trigger that and start the act of speaking. And that's quite amazing. And even more amazing, I guess, they are trying to sort of deconvolute those signals and trying to figure out what vowels and consonants those signals correspond to.
It's mind-blowing. It's just parts of speech, vocabulary.
Yep.
I can understand you could find the bits that say, here's how you make noise, but language?
But the actual language itself. Mm. So then, having done that, having sort of pinpointed the areas in the brain, they then got an extraordinarily brave volunteer who goes by the name of Bravo One. And he's in his late 30s. He had a brainstem stroke around about 15 or so years ago and severely paralyzed. He can move his head pretty much, and that's about it. So he can't speak. His vocal tract is paralyzed. And the way he communicates is by pointing at letters with a stick attached to a baseball cap on a screen. So he volunteered to be the guinea pig in all of this. And so what these workers did was that they came up with 50 words that you could create coherent sentences out of, essentially. And so words like water or family or good, you know, things like that. He then voluntarily underwent an operation to have electrodes implanted in the region of the brain which controls the speech, which they had sort of developed from the epileptic patients earlier on. And then what they got him to do, and this must have been utterly exhausting, they gave him these 50 words and they got him to try and say them. Now, remember, this guy's paralyzed. He can't actually talk, but he's busy trying to say these words, and they are recording his brainwaves as he's busy trying to do this. And so what they got was then 22 hours of brain activity over 48 sessions and several months this took. And that's, you know, that's quite incredible. And basically what they then did was that they had all of these brain signals, these electronic signals from the brain, or these electric signals from the brain. They then analysed these using artificial intelligence, and basically they were able to deconvolute those signals into what of those 50 words each signal actually meant or represented. And so that then has now enabled this guy to talk, quote-unquote, in short sentences.
You see, that's the marvel of AI. It is capable of processing so much detail so quickly.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, we couldn't do this sort of stuff without AI. And you know, so this guy now, he can talk in short sentences which appear on the screen. He can answer simple questions using those 50 words that he's got. He can now communicate at around about 18 words per minute. And the software that is doing all of this utterly extraordinary stuff is about 75% accurate at the moment. So
now, is it individualised, though? It can't necessarily, what his brain signals aren't necessarily going to be what someone else's brain signals are?
That is an extraordinarily good question, which I do not know the answer to, but I suspect that you're probably right. I mean, you know, people pronounce words in different ways and everything, and that probably emanates originally from the brain anyway. So, but, you know, just to do this, just the sheer extraordinariness, if that's a word, of all of this, I find that utterly, utterly remarkable, just mind-blowing.
All right. So that is an incredible story out of, where were they working? The University of California.
University of California, San Francisco, yeah.
Now, the history of doping at the Olympics, we might not have enough
have
time
a couple
to
of hours,
detail.
Yeah. No, I came across this paper the other day, and this is really interesting because up until Mexico in 1968, we didn't have any drug testing. That was the first Olympic Games where they did drug testing. And so before that, the first documented case of doping was in 1904 in St. Louis, of all places. And this was a U.S. athlete by the name of Tom Hicks. He was a marathon runner, and he decided before his race, during his race, actually, to have a concoction of brandy, egg white, and, wait for it, strychnine.
Eek!
Which is a convulsant, and apparently that was meant to be a good thing. He got to the end. He finished first. He collapsed. It took four doctors to revive him, but they didn't take away his medal. Then later on, 1920 in Antwerp, a guy by the name of Charlie Paddock in the US, he drank sherry with raw eggs before his 100-metre sprint final, which he won. I couldn't see Usain Bolt doing that. In 1936 in Berlin, there was the US backstroke swimmer Eleanor Holm. She didn't even make it to the Games. She was on the boat to the Games, and she got disqualified for quote-unquote acute alcoholism. She had a bit of a party on the boat. But all of this involves a New Zealander, actually. So one Dr. Arthur Porritt, which some may remember. The Governor General. He came to our school
Hockey field in Christchurch named after him. It was Porritt Park.
Porritt Park, yep.
Yep.
And so he was in the IOC, and in 1948, he was sort of head of a subcommittee, and he said that the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, shouldn't be involved in the doping questions and stuff. And he sort of delegated this to the International Federation of Sports Medicine, who then were in charge of all of that. And really, the IOC didn't then get involved until 1962, because in Rome in 1960, there was a Danish cyclist by the name of Knut Jensen who actually died in the cycling road race, which I didn't know. And he'd taken amphetamine. And so Porritt in 1964 basically sort of set up the fact that the IOC then would have to start doing drug testing, et cetera, et cetera. And basically, you know, since 1968, obviously, they've been having drug tests all through the Olympics, and the IOC are busy trying to catch up with the scientists, unfortunately, because they're coming up with better and better doping.
Yeah, that's a never-ending story, that one. Okay, now, we don't have time. You've got 40 seconds.
Okay.
Gold, right. Silver, and bronze medals.
Gold, silver, and bronze medals. Okay, so gold. All the gold mined in the world, okay, would fit into a cube that's 28 metres by 28 metres by 28 metres. That's it. That's all the gold. Say wow, please. Come on,
and
that's
amazing.
And the silver? There's truckloads more silver, but I find that amazing. Gold, what else can you do with gold? You take a gold the size of a grain of rice, you can hammer it out into a sheet that is 1 square metre in area. Pretty amazing. It's the most malleable, it's the most ductile of elements. Silver, the highest electrical conductivity of all the elements. Argentina is named after silver. Cyprus is named after copper. Bronze is an alloy of copper and tin, and I'm rapidly running out of time.
You are such a star, Alan. I love doing this to you because you're so good at it. Alan Blackman is our science commentator.